You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're watching Pirate Breakdown with Sutton Young. Join Sutton every Wednesday night on The Sports Objective as he talks East Carolina football. Here's Sutton.
Thursday, but you know what? It's still a great day for Pirate Breakdown. Glad to have you with us here on week three of Pirate Breakdown. I'm Sutton Young and joined tonight by the Sports Objective's own Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, Sutton. Hope you are.
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. I think we also can say that we had a pretty good performance by the Pirates last Saturday.
No doubt. I mean, you see a 39-21 victory, you'll take that anytime. There are definitely things to clean up, you know, specifically some of the zone coverage that the Pirates didn't play so well in allowing a 200-yard receiver and Ollie Jennings. And he had, what, about 65 or 70% of the Monarchs offense as they only had about 280 or 90 yards in the game. So that's something that I know Blake Carroll and Coach Houston definitely want to get cleaned up. But outside of that, you know, and also some woes with the PAT field goal team, I know we'll dive into that more later on. There was a lot more positive than there was negative.
Oh, no doubt. And something I want to mention, too, real quick is, I mean, obviously, Virginia Tech, they had an embarrassing way to start their year with the loss to Old Dominion. They beat Boston College, as we all know, was a bowl team last year, the team that was supposed to play us. And VT beat them in all three phases. So, frankly, I think that makes our win against Old Dominion look better, and obviously Old Dominion's win against Virginia Tech better.
No doubt. I was certainly keeping an eye on that Virginia Tech game against Boston College, on them coming out and defeating the Eagles, I think it was 27-10, and yep. Coach Prize – home opener last week at Lane Stadium, but definitely had to be encouraged. And like Coach Houston said, definitely those things that you need to get cleaned up. And you know, he wanted to, he would have liked to, instead of 39-21, you know, have seen 46-14 or something of that nature. But a lot more good than bad, and you know, plenty of reason to be encouraged moving forward.
I agree with that. Though something that has stood out to me the last 2 weeks or two games is it's been the same thing. We have not been able to really get a groove in the first half. I mean, you look at the points we've scored in the first half compared to the second half. That's something. I mean, yes, the Old Dominion one was good, but moving forward, if we're going to beat teams like UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, I mean, heck, even BYU, we have to play better in the first half.
We do, and, you know, kind of on the other side of that, after struggling to run the ball in both of those first two games in the first half, you know, on the bright side, we ended up nearly running for 300 yards on, 270, 280, and he had Keaton with the 81-yarder, and sure, that kind of distorts things, but you'll take all those that you can get, but your point is definitely accurate, and we need to run the ball with more consistency. And I think you saw that in the second half, not only out of Keaton, but Rajay Harris had the touchdown run down to the left corner of the end zone there in front of the out of the Murphy Center. And then, and not only that, but you saw more 4, 5, 6, 7 yard carries as opposed to just 2 or 3 yard carries.
No, absolutely, though. Something definitely to dive into, is something that we've seen not really go our way for 2 weeks. I mean, it didn't really hurt us last week, but it's the performance of the special teams.
Certainly. I already referenced the PAT field goal. It was well-documented, the NC State game with the game-winning field goal that went wide right. And then also the PAT, and really the whole operation was off that day, you know, be it, you know, I really don't think there was necessarily a bad snap that day. Can't recall for sure, but, you know, there was one hold, you know, where the laces weren't out. Obviously the issues there with the kick and then also perhaps the protection, but the protection was the primary, if not sole culprit a week ago against Old Dominion on those two blocks down in the boneyard end of the field. You had on the first one, it was right in front of me. You saw the Old Dominion rusher, you know, just go untouched. And basically, I thought for a second, I was like, he's going to have to slow down or he's going to run past it. So definitely a lot to clean up there. And we have to get that figured out because we're going to be in close ball games. And if we're not careful, it's going to come back to bite us like it did in that NC State game. And then on the field goal that Owen did make, we were very fortunate that that was not blocked because it was kicked extremely low. I know it was – the field may have been a little wet. I didn't go back and look to see if maybe he slipped at all, but that ball was kicked – I mean, when I say extremely low, I'm talking about shoulder level. I don't know how it didn't get blocked, but fortunately it did not.
Yeah, we were very fortunate there. And something I was watching all the NFL games on Sunday, and the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, that game, I saw a kick. It was the Bengals kicker. He's a decent kicker, but one of his kicks, it was laces facing him, and he missed it wide left. So I'm thinking, I know that a lot of people last week were just upset with Owen, but you have to think, like, the snap makes the difference. It really does, because it doesn't matter how good of a kicker you are. I mean, I saw professional kickers do it too. I mean, if those laces are facing you, you're in trouble. Now, luckily, we didn't have that on Saturday, but, I mean, we got to avoid the block kicks.
Yeah, and as I already mentioned, you know, snap, hold, kick, protection, everything has been a bit off at one time or another, you know, some combination of those at other times. And I saw that kick that you mentioned with the Cincinnati Bengals and Pittsburgh Steelers, and, yeah, it was a high snap. And then the timing was thrown off, and, you know, he hooked it. So hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, we're not kicking many field goals this week. Hopefully we're scoring touchdowns. But hopefully after we have a lead, maybe Owen can get a couple attempts. And if nothing else, hopefully he'll be kicking six or seven, if not more, PATs. And we can have all those, you know, go seamlessly.
I agree. Let's switch gears now to third down offense and defense from the Pirates. I was actually pretty pleased with the Pirates on both sides on third down.
Yeah, the Pirates are in the top 25 nationally in both of those statistics right now. You know, third down offense, the Pirates are ranking, I think it's 18th, or no, 24th nationally, and they're converting at a 53% clip, which is about a 15 to 18% improvement from a season ago. And then last year, we had to rely on so many fourth down conversions. And then defensively, opponents are converting, only 24%, which is excellent. And that ranks 18th nationally. And then the rushing defense has also been stellar so far. Small sample size through just two games, but that also ranks very highly nationally, 16th, 74 yards per game.
No doubt about it. Let's talk, too, about the offense. I thought Holton looked pretty decent. I mean, the receivers – I mean, it's hard for the receivers to have a decent game with the conditions that they were in, but, I mean, I was pleased with how the receivers did, too.
No doubt. Holton looks very comfortable and probably the most comfortable I've ever seen him look in the passing game. When we weren't able to run the football against NC State, they came through and gave us a chance to win the game. After having drops in the first half of that one, we saw guys step up in the second half and make plays. And last week, Old Dominion did a good job of limiting C.J. Johnson, but then you had Jalen Johnson, 9 catches for 93 yards, and you also had Zay Winstead had another solid game, 5 or 6 catches. And he now has 11 catches in his young Pirate career. So those guys are giving us exactly what we would have hoped after we plucked them from the transfer portal from Georgia and Toledo, respectively. And, they, in addition to the plays they've made, Shane Calhoun, Ryan Jones have been solid, as you would expect. And we have a nice variety of options there. And this week, Josiah Hatfield will be entered back into the mix.
That's definitely going to be a big, big piece for the Pirates. I mean, you look at this team now. I mean, it's a good team, but with Hatfield back, it just makes the team even better.
It really does. You know, like, taking a look at Josiah, he's a guy that has never really been able to do it with consistency, but he has some of the top speed on the team. You know, some players have even mentioned him in the same breath with Keaton Mitchell and, you know, some of the faster players on this team. And obviously it's well documented, you know, how fast Keaton is and the tweets on social media, you know, as far as Keaton running 22 miles per hour on that 81-yard touchdown run against Old Dominion. But Josiah, I think he's caught something like 35 or 40 balls in his career. When I think of Josiah Hatfield, I think of him getting the ball on reverses and in the rounds, maybe some jet sweeps at times. And then also I think of the big play he had on a post route against SMU back in 2020, or maybe no, it was 2019, and down there at SMU. And then also I think of the play he had last year when Tyler Snead hit him in stride on the first play from scrimmage for that 75-yard touchdown against the Gamecocks.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those plays last year that they're only – I mean, obviously, I was at all the home games last year, and that was one of the plays that obviously sticks out to me. I mean, I just have a feeling that we're going to get a lot from Hatfield this year.
Yep, it's going to be interesting to see how Josiah performs. He certainly has the potential, and with the way the passing game has been clicking, you know, he's been present, you know, at practice and, you know, took part in the scrimmages and so forth. He was just ineligible for those first couple games, but it's great to have him back and just one more weapon that Holton Ahlers has at his disposal.
Oh, no doubt. Let's switch gears, Bubba, to the conference. There's some pretty big games around the conference this week. I mean, obviously, USF is taking on Florida. That, I mean, to be honest, Bubba, is that really worth talking about? Florida lost to Kentucky. I mean, they're a decent team, but you look at South Florida, and frankly, they put themselves at the doormat of the conference.
No doubt. They struggled with Howard for a while and then ended up winning by at least three or four touchdowns. But yeah, that was a pretty alarming score when I looked. I think it was right before halftime last week in that game down in Tampa, and the Bulls were struggling with Howard. And yeah, going on the road to the Swamp, Florida coming off a loss to Kentucky, you know, looking to get some things figured out before they have a big game up in Knoxville against Tennessee, and looking to avoid going 0-2 in SEC play. Unfortunately, I don't think it'll be pretty for the Bulls over in Gainesville.
No, there's no doubt. It's going to be a game where I think that Bulls fans are going to watch first quarter, and they're going to be down by probably three touchdowns or so, and then they're going to change the channel. It's just, it doesn't look very promising for South Florida right now under Jeff Scott. I mean, he seems like a great guy. He did wonders at Clemson, but it's just not really translating right now at USF.
Yeah, and definitely very much still a work in progress, and it'll be interesting to see how patient they will be with Coach Scott. Last year, it seemed as though they were making some progress. If you recall, coming into that game in Greenville, that was two teams that were really, you know, kind of at a crossroads on their season. And that may be a bit of a strong term, but, you know, both teams were right there around the 3-4 mark or something like that. And then the Pirates really went on a run to close the season and finished 7-5. Meanwhile, the Bulls went the opposite direction.
No doubt. And I'm not saying that that game for the Bulls really was the turning point, but they have been going downhill for a while, even under Charlie Strong. So it just doesn't seem like it's going to be fixed. But another new coach in the American Athletic Conference over at SMU, they've got Maryland this week. I mean, I think that has the potential to be a decent game, Bubba.
Yeah, Rhett Lashley, obviously no stranger to SMU. He had been there on Coach Dyke's staff and then moved on to another opportunity, and now he's back as the head man. And the Mustangs are a 3-point dog on the road in College Park. It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. Maryland coming off a dominant effort and a blowout of Charlotte on the road, and they've really put up a lot of numbers against inferior competition in the first couple weeks. So now that they're facing a quality opponent, it'll be interesting to see how the Terps and Mustangs, handle what should be a very competitive game in College Park.
Yeah, definitely Maryland's first true test of the year. I mean, Maryland, it seems like they're making progress under Locksley. It's slow progress, but it looks like they are making some progress. So it's going to be interesting to see what Maryland does this year. I think Maryland and Rutgers are the two teams in the Big Ten who I'm really interested to see what they do.
No doubt. Coach Lockley or Locksley, they're at Maryland. Definitely a big year for him. And I'll tell you what, Sutton, another game that's very intriguing, much more so than a lot of people would have originally guessed. And that is Houston hosting the Kansas Jayhawks. The Jayhawks are 2-0, coming off a big overtime win. Actually, that came by 13 points at West Virginia. Houston is a 9.5-point favorite, but the Cougars have had two very competitive games, and they won a overtime game at UTSA in their opener, and then lost a close one last week in Lubbock.
I'm not going to go and say that Houston was overrated going into the year, but losing to Texas Tech was not good. It was not good at all. It just was not. I mean, frankly, I thought Houston looked sloppy. I mean, you look at them, and a lot of people had them as the pick to win the conference, and now they're going and facing a Kansas team. And look, I mean, we all know the story behind Kansas football, but they did beat West Virginia last week. I mean, that was pretty impressive what they did. I mean, granted, I don't think West Virginia is going to do anything this year. I mean, they're certainly not the team we saw 10, 15 years ago. I mean, they've certainly lost that status of their program, but it's going to be interesting to see that game with Houston, Kansas. I could see it going both ways.
Sticking within the state of Kansas, I mean, that game is being played down at Houston, but the Kansas State Wildcats will be hosting the Tulane Green Wave in Manhattan. K-State's a 14-point favorite. Tulane has handled its business, taking care of UMass and also Alcorn State. They're in New Orleans, and now they're going on the road. And I really think that they could win this game. I would definitely I would lean toward taking them in the 14 with very little hesitation.
I don't know about that. I really Kansas State under Chris Kielman-Klieman. He's doing a pretty good job with that program. They're always a tough, gritty team. I mean, they pull upsets. I mean, as much as I don't want to say this, I don't think this is going to be a close game. I think that Kansas State is going to win on all three phases, and it's going to be a double digit win.
Any other games with those are the main ones within the league that really stand out, and anything else that you're keeping an eye on nationally or regionally for that matter this weekend?
I mean, really, it's a slow week, I think, across college football. You don't have a bunch of marquee games. I mean, this is no offense to App State. I mean, who they're hosting game day on Saturday, which that's incredible for them. But I mean, it just shows you. I mean, it's kind of a slow week in college football. So it's kind of, I think this week is going to be the week where we see, okay, who's legit, who's overrated, who could come in late in the year. Going to be one of those types of weeks. And I think for ECU and Campbell, that is going to show some stuff about ECU. Because if you look at the last few times the Pirates have played FCS opponents, aside from Gardner-Webb, they have been close games.
They really have been, and you mentioned Gardner Webb. The Bulldogs put a scare into Coastal Carolina a week ago. I think that was something like 31-27 or 34-31, but that is a score that really stood out on a day that the Sun Belt Conference was really garnering a lot of attention nationally with what App State did, knocking off Texas A&M at Kyle Field, and then also Marshall taking down Notre Dame, and of course, Georgia Southern winning that thriller. I think it was what, 45-42 in Lincoln, Nebraska, and getting Scott Frost fired.
Yeah, I mean that's a shame for Scott Frost because you never want to see somebody at their alma mater be let go. I mean, I was hoping that he would be able to turn it around, but it just seems like there's too much of a problem there. And I was actually our family friends, they had somebody over. He was a Georgia Southern grad, and he was just flipping out. I mean, obviously Nebraska is not the team they were 20 years ago, but it's still one of the big brands of college football. And I mean, a change had to be made. A change had to be made. And I'll tell you this now before we go into Campbell. If I had to predict right now who the head coach at Nebraska will be, it's going to be Matt Rhule, because I don't think Matt Rhule is going to survive this year in Carolina. And if Matt Rhule gets fired midway through the year in Carolina, I think that's going to be the guy for Nebraska.
Yeah, if I'm a Nebraska fan, I would certainly be okay with that. With Coach Rhule's track record in the college ranks, everything he did at Temple, a very hard place to win, and then took over a very challenging situation to say the least in Waco with Baylor, and within a couple years had them back, winning double digit games like Art Briles had done. So he's definitely going to be on that list for sure, and should things not go well in Carolina this year, which I'd say that's a fairly strong possibility. I would not be surprised to see Matt Rhule at least getting interviewed and be on that short list there in Lincoln.
No doubt. I mean, if I am the athletic director there, I think Trev Alberts is the AD there. That's my first phone call. I mean, Luke Fickell would be another guy. Matt Campbell, those would be the three that I would go for. Because whenever you fire a head coach, you have to think, okay, we're firing our head coach. We're bringing in somebody who is better. You don't want to get a guy who you're like, I don't know. I mean, you have to be confident with that decision that you're going to be able to get a guy who is going to be better than what you had. And those three guys, I think, could easily be upgrades.
No doubt. Let's shift gears and wrap things up by talking about the Pirates and this matchup with Campbell. Obviously, the Camels restarted their program back in 2006 after dropping it way back in 1950. These programs have not met since 1939, so this is the first matchup in the modern era. And as you take a look at it, and Campbell's 1-1. They defeated the Citadel 29-10 on opening weekend on that Thursday night. And then last weekend, they went up to play what is a top 20 William & Mary team in the FCS ranks. And William & Mary was coming off a 17-point win down at Charlotte against the 49ers, defeating Charlotte 41-24. So that was a stout test for Mike Minter's ball club. And even though they lost 37-21, he was very pleased overall with how the Camels handled that. And I think as you take a look, one of the things that stands out about the matchup is their quarterback, Hodge Malik Williams, a seasoned vet. He's a dual threat guy, and he's a guy that Mike Huston has talked about a lot this week and really emphasized to his players just how critically important it will be to get some pressure on him, to be disciplined and so forth. And it'll be a good preparation for the Pirates, and as they'll be facing the likes of a John Rhys Plumlee in league play, the new quarterback for UCF that transferred over from Ole Miss.
No doubt about it. Bubba, do you have a score prediction for Campbell? It's certainly one of those games where, at least in my opinion, I think it's either going to be a blowout for ECU and it's going to be quick, or they could possibly provide a scare. What do you think is going to happen, man?
Honestly, had not thought much about a specific score. I will say something like, I'll say Pirates, let's go East Carolina 52, Campbell 13.
Yeah, it's similar to what I'm thinking. I'll give you one right off the spot. numbers come to mind is 53. I think the Pirates score 53 on Saturday. Campbell, yeah, I could see 13. I think that they'll get a touchdown and knock in two field goals. 53-13 is my final. It's going to be an interesting game. Hopefully the Pirates will be able to sail past this FCS opponent. I mean, they have not been able to in many recent contests. I mean, William Mary also including in that. But I think with the depth this team has, I don't see it being an issue. Well, any final thoughts?
Yeah, what I would say, just going into this game, obviously it's a game that the Pirates are definitely expected to win. You know, some places don't even have a line when it's an FCS game. Others have the Pirates, you know, a 28-30 point favorite, something along those lines. If we come out and handle our business, then that should be the case, as was reflected, you know, there with our score predictions. But I will say, you know, some of those things that we saw struggles with against Old Dominion, like some of our zone coverages, and then also running the football early in the game. Keep an eye on that. William and Mary, they had two guys go for nearly 100 yards. One ran for 95, the other for 89. So don't be surprised if Keaton in that ground attack, maybe Keaton and Rajay can both get over 100 yards. That would not shock me, you know, unless it's just a matter of them trying to take that away so much that we're throwing the ball. But I think this is a game where maybe even if Campbell does stack the box a bit and try to make the Pirates put it in the air, that you may see us commit to running the ball a little bit more than we would have against NC State. So that's something to watch. And then also, let's see how that PAT field goal team does. Hopefully they're going to get a lot of opportunities, 6, 7, 8 PATs this weekend. Let's hope that we take care of business. And then lastly, in the stands, the Pirates had a record crowd, 51-7-11 for NC State last week. Not bad, but hopefully this week we'll see an increase after having just shy of 37,000 a week ago. Pirates averaging 44,282. About 170 more than UCF thus far. Both teams have 7 home games, and both teams have very appealing home schedules, and in addition to quality football teams. So the challenge is there, Pirate Nation. Not only can the Pirates win the conference crown on the field, possibly, let's average the most of any team in the American, and let's show this league as well as the nation what Pirate Nation is about.
Absolutely. Love to hear that, Bubba. Bubba, thank you for joining me, and thank you for watching. Stay undaunted as always, and have a great night, and come on out to the Audi Fickling on Saturday. We'll see you there.